I am extremely pleased to welcome to Exit Strategy Rachel Schnoll, who is the CEO of the Jewish Communal Fund. And I really thank you so much for making time to be with us on the podcast. It's really special to me.
Thanks for having me.
Some context for everyone. The Jewish Communal Fund, or JCF, was founded in 1972 to facilitate charitable giving by the Jewish community. And since then, it has evolved into the largest Jewish donor advised fund in the country, promoting the welfare and growth of both secular and Jewish organizations with local and global impact. And I have to say, on the local level here in New York, I'm so pleased to say that JCF played a pivotal role in the creation and history of Plaza Jewish Community Chapel. JCF was one of our largest original funders, and here we are in the month of March celebrating Plaza's 23rd anniversary. So it's really so poignant and exciting to have you on the podcast. Okay, so Rachel, we have to dive in here because I know that many of our listeners, perhaps, don't really understand what donor advised funds are, nor the tax benefits, nor the potential charitable impact, and importantly, this as a tool for legacy building. Let's discuss that first. What does legacy mean in a philanthropic and even an end-of-life context?
So let's first talk about what a donor advised fund is, because a lot of people don't know. At the most simple level, a donor advised fund is like bill pay for your philanthropy. In the same way that you might pay your Con Ed bill on your online banking and you just type in, I'm going to pay Con Ed, a donor advised fund allows you to do that, but for charitable giving. Let's say I want to make a donation to Plaza Jewish Community Chapel. I'm going to go on my donor advised fund. I'm going to type in $100 to Plaza Jewish Community Chapel, and the donor advised fund is going to send that off. There's a lot of other benefits, though, that come wrapped around that ease. So, for example, you mentioned some tax benefits. So when a individual puts money into their donor advised fund, they get to deduct that donation from their taxes. And you can give cash, you can give appreciated securities, you can even give what we call complex assets like private stock or shares in a private equity fund or real estate or even art. In most cases, because you're giving it to a charity, a donor advised fund is considered a 501c3 charity. You don't pay any tax on the capital gains and you get the taxable deduction for the value of that donation. So there's big tax benefits. Once the money comes into a donor advised fund, we have an investment platform that's similar to a 401k. You, the donor, can decide where you want to invest it. Your money will grow, which magnifies the impact that you can have philanthropically. So if you start your donor advised fund with $5,000, you invest it and it grows to $10,000, now you can be more philanthropic than when you made that original donation. And then on the backside, you grant out to charities. The money in the donor advised fund can only be used to grant out to charities. And that's what I was referring to before. You want to give to Plaza Jewish Community Chapel. You're going to say, I want to give, I said 100, let's make it 1,000. You put that into the portal and we send that out in either electronic payment or a check. All your record keeping is in one place. So unlike what we call checkbook philanthropy, where you're going on to different websites and saying, I want to do this and entering your credit card, and then the charity doesn't receive the full amount of money because the credit card takes a fee. That's not the way a donor advised fund works. A donor advised fund has it all in one place. So if you make one contribution in the year, you get one acknowledgement from the donor advised fund, and then all of your grants that you make, you can make as many grants as you want out to charities. All the record keeping is in one place.
Yeah, and it's very, very streamlined in terms of making the donations and being able to really see it as opposed to writing a donation, putting the receipt in a file and wondering, I wonder how much I gave to such and such this year. So that's very, very helpful.
Not only this year, but we actually keep a record of 10 years. If I give to Plaza Jewish Community Chapel every year, I can see, oh, I gave $1,000 every year. So over 10 years, I've given, you know, $10,000. So you can really gauge your philanthropic impact.
Super helpful and so important to do. You know, we've had various guests on the podcast talking about legacy and what shape it can take and what it can look like. Why is a philanthropic legacy important?
At the most basic level, a legacy is how you want to be remembered. A philanthropic legacy can really help you transfer values that you hold dear to yourself. In the Jewish faith, many people care about tzedakah. They might care about our Jewish heritage and taking pride in that Jewish heritage. That's really important to me. You also may have people that care for animals or social justice or even other interests like Yiddish. You know, I think about my grandfather, who was not particularly a religious Jew, but he cared very deeply about the fact that his family had emigrated from Russia, from Odessa, and they spoke Yiddish, and he had a great love and pride in Yiddishkeit and the Yiddish language. So every year on his yard site, I think about him and the Yiddish Book Center, which was an important philanthropy to him, and honor him by making a donation to the Yiddish Book Center. That isn't something that he wrote down or did anything formally. That was an informal legacy. Many people want to create a more formal legacy. And actually, this is quite a Jewish path because some people don't call it legacy. Some people actually call the writing down of what they want to pass on, sort of their values. They call that an ethical will. Ethical wills actually have their basis in Genesis. What we find is it not only benefits the recipients of the will or the person it's directed to, but also the writer, because you have to dive so deeply and think about what's meaningful to yourself so you can really articulate what you value most in life and what other people can learn from you. Some things that people might include are, what lessons have I learned in life and why is that meaningful? Personal stories. You know, I mentioned my grandfather's immigration story. That is getting to be a little lost in our family. I wish he had written it down. There are other values or beliefs or things that people feel gratitude for that they may want to include in a legacy or an ethical will, and advice or hopes for the future. So these are all things to think about when creating your legacy. Another Jewish piece of this is how, and Stephanie, you and your colleagues know this more than anyone, the value that we as Jews put on honoring our loved ones who have left us, how we honor them so frequently with tzedakah as opposed to a physical remembrance like flowers. And that is, I think, unique and something that we have definitely seen other Americans start to adopt that as well. That tzedakah or donation in the person's memory is usually to an organization that was meaningful to them. So a little bit of legacy is part of their value system. And it also is a little bit of tikkun olam. You know, let's try and honor this person's memory by making the world a better place.
This is a significant and an important exercise in examining values and priorities and always impact. That's not always easy. So let's talk about that.
And you're right. It really can be a teachable moment. I like to think of it as a loving moment because the most successful legacies that I see at the Jewish Communal Fund are legacies where there's a feeling of love and respect. The heirs wanting to honor the memory of the person who has left that legacy. I've also seen, unfortunately, less successful legacies or wishes where the next generation feels an obligation or maybe doesn't feel trusted. Sometimes the person is trying to control from beyond the grave, and that's where you don't have as much trust. Legacy can really be a gift or a burden. As you have a conversation with your family, I like to think of it as an invitation, not an expectation. In my experience, the difference is really agency. When you give that person who's the recipient of your legacy the freedom to be influenced by your values and your teachings, but not be controlled by them, your memory is certainly going to be more honored. And they're going to feel like it's really a gift. I'll give you an example. There was a woman who had a Jewish communal fund as her donor advised fund. She passed away unexpectedly, a single and had no family, but she had some very, very dear friends. In this case, though, she didn't leave any wishes as to how she wanted it spent. Her two very, very dear friends are now the successors, what we call the successors, are really now the fund holders or the in control of this philanthropic legacy. They've really thought about their friend and the things that were important to her. She was a patron of the arts, and she was also the daughter of Holocaust survivors. These friends are not only going to continue this woman's support of the arts, but also will soon work with a philanthropic advisor to figure out how to honor her legacy within trauma or maybe anti-Semitism. One of the women who was a dear friend of hers said to me, "My friend really left us such a gift to be able to be so impactful and remember their friend in a meaningful way by creating real impact, not only in the arts, but also in whatever other avenue they pursue." I love that idea of leaving this as a gift, because I've also seen it work the other way, where somebody leaves a foundation or a donor advised fund with very, very specific instructions, or they don't trust the people who they've left the money to and have all sorts of legal advisors or trustees that have to approve. In my experience, most people are very thoughtful about being left a philanthropic legacy. They want to honor the person who has left them. Having a little freedom to do that is helpful.
This becomes a whole process of examining and re-examining priorities and principles and learning about all the organizations that are out there.
And also, that's so important to have the conversation in life also. You mentioned organizations, and before when we were talking about ethical wills and legacy, that's part of the conversation that people can have with their loved ones when they're alive. I'll bring back the example of my grandfather, and in addition to Yiddishkeit, Ellis Island was another place that was important to him because of that immigrant journey. So if you know the organizations, you can continue to honor them. You know, a lot of the families that we work with young children, get their kids involved by volunteering. I'm sure you hear that as well. And then those children know, you know, children may not have dollars to give, but they know, oh, this was important to my parents. The Jewish Communal Fund has a relationship with UJA Federation in New York, and many of our fund holders bring their children to volunteer at different UJA events. And then as those children grow up, they have that real meaningful connection.
We need to talk about how does one start putting these pieces into place to create and resource a donor advised fund? The process, is it complicated? What does it look like?
So Stephanie, it couldn't be easier. A donor advised fund, I encourage people to use it in life for your philanthropy, because as I spoke at the beginning, it just makes your philanthropy so much more organized and easier. It takes about 10 minutes to set up a Jewish communal fund. You go on our website, we have an online form, you set it up, and then we'll call you to talk about how you're going to submit your first assets, whether you're going to send cash or appreciated securities, and we'll get you set up on our online portal. So that part is very, very easy. Then you think about the legacy piece of it. One of the nice things about Jewish Communal Fund is that you can have as many successors as you'd like on your fund, and successors are the people that will inherit your fund. There's no limit to how many generations you can have successors. So the Jewish Communal Fund was founded in 1972, and we have some funds that were founded in the early 70s, and they're now on the third generation of that family. There's a lot of different ways that successors can continue the philanthropic journey of the person that may have started the fund. So one way is that they keep the fund intact. And I mentioned the third generation. So there's, you know, a fund is still named after the original founders. And those heirs continue to give in their names, but also in the name of the person that originally founded the fund. Another way you can do it, I have three children. I can say, upon my death, let's split this fund into three. So each one of my children can have their own freedom to decide how they want to give philanthropically. Because sometimes a family is very united on how they want to give, and other times families are less united in how you want to give. A third way that a person can do it is, let's not get the children involved, or the children are doing their own thing, and I want to be sure that my charities are supported. And so I'm going to make the charities my successor. There's a lot of different ways to think about setting up a succession plan or a legacy plan. That story I gave earlier about the woman that passed away and left her estate to the Jewish Communal Fund, we see that frequently as well, where people can make the Jewish Communal Fund the recipient of an IRA or a 401k, or name it in your estate plans, and that stays out of probate, you know, is giving to a charity. So it makes estate planning a lot simpler that way. So there's a lot of ways to establish your legacy, have the conversation with your family, but then to actually implement it, it's very easy to do that using a donor advised fund like the Jewish Communal Fund.
I'm curious to know about the JCF ecosystem of advice and support, because even though it sounds simple, I'm sure that people want to know that there is a resource of support out there. So talk about that for a moment.
So what we find is that most people who come to a donor advised fund like Jewish Communal Fund, they have a pretty good sense of where they want to give. So they're already developed philanthropists in that way. Should they need help, we can help them connect to resources. We have a private client offering for people with funds of over $1 million. There's actually some free philanthropic support that's included. The donor advises on two things. The donor advises on what charities they want to send their money to. The donor also advises on how they want to invest the money. And investing the money is another place where we have resources that can help them, or they can actually have their own financial advisor that they're using for the rest of their financial portfolio. They can have that financial advisor manage their assets at the Jewish Communal Fund as well.
I was really touched by the story that you just told about the woman who left her estate. I think personal stories are so very important. Can you share some that you've heard about how this model has benefited individuals and families, and the issues that they're passionate about?
The Jewish Communal Fund will also work with someone if they leave money to the Jewish Communal Fund and maybe don't have heirs. We had one such fund holder left a large portion of his estate to the Jewish Communal Fund. His name was Henry Neufeld. He had lost a lot of his family in the Holocaust, had no children, and his wife had predeceased him, and he was a scientist. We worked with a philanthropic consultant in Israel to try and really find a way to honor his legacy and bring in science and bring in Israel, because Israel was very important to him. Ultimately, we created a social hub in his name, the Henry Neufeld Social Hub at Hebrew University. It's in the Goodman Brain Science Building, and its purpose is for all the different scientists that are conducting research in that building to have a meeting place where they can cross-pollinate. And while they're having a cup of coffee, they can be talking about their different research projects and maybe ideas arise from that. So that was another really, really meaningful way to help dive into someone's legacy and honor them after philanthropically, impactfully, and also honor their memory.
Boy, it really shows you there are so many people out there doing such good work and leaving these beautiful, beautiful legacies so others can benefit as well. And that's just incredibly inspiring. Beyond distributing funds at the recommendation of funders, I know that JCF is also making charitable gifts at its own entity. I'd like you to talk about that a little bit because I would love to know the impact that JCF is making.
I haven't yet talked about what makes the Jewish Communal Fund Jewish. So what's the J in Jewish Communal Fund? So the most important thing to me as a Jewish Communal Fund holder is that every time I make a gift, especially to a secular charity, I'm identifying myself as a Jew. So that check is coming from Rachel Schnall via the Jewish Communal Fund. So my heritage and what's important to me is stamped on that gift. On top of that, we are a community of Jewish givers. The things that are important to our community might be different than the community that is at Fidelity or Schwab or Merrill Lynch. For example, since October 7th, our fund holders have given millions of dollars to Israel in support of the efforts and millions of dollars to combat anti-Semitism, both broadly in the U.S. and specifically on campuses. These are things that we talk about, we have webinars about, and we help our fund holders find the right places to give in areas of interest to the Jewish community. We also offer Jewish investments on our platform. So you can invest in Israel stocks, you can invest in Israel bonds, you can invest in U.S. stocks with a Jewish value tilt on that. And we have two loan platforms that you can invest your money in. One is Ogin, which is low interest loans in Israel, and the other is Hebrew Free Loan here in New York. But then the final thing that makes us Jewish and the most important, and this is what you really asked your question about, Stephanie, is how we give back to the Jewish community. The Jewish Communal Fund gives anywhere from $2 to $4 million a year back to the Jewish community. We give a $2 million unrestricted gift to UJA Federation to support all the amazing humanitarian work that they're doing both in the New York area and in Israel. And then we give to other projects that support the Jewish community, generally in the New York area. So Plaza Jewish Community Chapel was one of those back, I think it was back in 1999 when you were being founded. And we work with our partners at UJA to say, where are the greatest needs in the area? And that was one of them. Other things that we've supported have been programs to fight food insecurity. We've given many donations to support Jewish camping. We've given to many Jewish community centers around the region to support needs like a room at a Jewish community center to support adults who need to relearn daily living skills because they've had some sort of disability. So we're mainly supporting humanitarian needs in the New York metropolitan area. But when there's special situations like the war in Ukraine, the October 7th attacks in Israel, we've also made additional donations to support efforts.
Jewish values are truly at the heart of the Jewish Communal Fund.
Absolutely.
From everything you've said, it's all about the importance of Jewish values. And I have to say, as Plaza celebrates its 23rd anniversary, because we opened our doors in 2001, though everything did begin.
We made the donation so you could open your doors. Yes, yeah,
exactly. In 1999, it took us a while. This is truly a moment to mark the contribution of the Jewish Communal Fund. When you walk in our front door here at Plaza, you will see a plaque that's on the wall that talks about the contribution of the Jewish Communal Fund and, of course, UJA Federation. This endeavor has served thousands and thousands of families. We are now a resource for end-of-life conversation, and it truly is because of the generosity and the thoughtfulness of the Jewish Communal Fund that we are where we are today. And so, Rachel Schnoll, as the CEO, I thank you and the organization because it is because of you and your Jewish values that we are here today doing our sacred work day in and day out. So thank you for being on the podcast. Thank you for being a visionary in the community. I really appreciate all that you've done and maybe more to do.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie, for those very kind words about Jewish Communal Fund. And I was very honored to have this conversation with you. Thank you.
As the host of Exit Strategy, I thank you for tuning in to what I hope was an informative and illuminating conversation. I urge you to visit our show notes, and there's an email listed there. So if you have any questions, send them my way. In the meantime, please share this episode with anyone you know who may be interested and subscribe to Exit Strategy. Wherever you listen to your podcasts each month, we'll renew our conversation with another topic, and I'm really happy you're along for the ride. I'm Stephanie Gary, and this is Exit Strategy.